Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Hey, we're back with another UK Tech Weekly podcast. It's Henry Borrell here, taking the chair in a week that saw Fitbit skimming stones and ending up keeping a pebble, the camera turning on the Met Police as they made some clouded Microsoft judgment, but Azurus, it's all okay, and a trip down the Amazon without a paddle for anyone with a smartphone. Just don't expect a private ride. This week's pod takes place on an audio ranch, where a disembodied audio voice tells us to build an audio baseball field, playing audio sports with invisible audio stars in order to convince my dead audio father to come play a game of audio catch with me to ease his audio pain. He's the fastest pitcher on the field. We've got Chris Martin, consumer tech editor of PC Advisor.
Hello.
He'll turn it around from the bottom of the ninth. It's Tamlin McGee, online editor at Techworld.
All right.
And he's always guaranteed to get past second base. It's Scott Carey, online editor at Computerworld UK.
Hello.
So, listener, join us by confidently walking into 40 minutes of audio corn. Who knows what's on the other side? Is it tech? Pebble, pebble, you've torn your dress. Pebble, pebble, your face is a mess. Pebble, pebble, how could you go? Fitbit has bought you so. Chris Martin. I'm getting no reaction here.
Hello.
Has Fitbit burst the pebble bubble to leave it in a pile of rubble, or is this brand new double a route out of trouble?
Oh. I don't know where to start.
It's a really strong start, is what it is.
Tell us what's happened in the smartwatch world.
As you alluded to in your little jingle song there, Fitbit has bought Pebble, or acquired it, however you want to put it. So Pebble is kind of, in a way, no more. It's kind of dead. And Pebble, if you don't know, is one of the kind of original tech wearable companies. Had success on Kickstarter. Probably one of the most successful Kickstarter things that's ever happened.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, we could kind of say that they pretty much popularized the smartwatch.
Yeah. So the original Pebble was kind of the original smartwatch, with its e-ink screen and decent battery life and all those kind of things. But yeah, Fitbit, the very well-known wearable fitness band giant,
there you go,
has bought them up, and one of the sad things is that two of the most recent Pebble products have been canned, so everybody who backed them on Kickstarter will not be getting those devices, and one of them is the Pebble Time 2.
That's right.
And the other one is the Pebble Core.
Because we got excited about this when it was announced, because it was like a little 3G device, wasn't it, that you could basically just stream Spotify
to. These were announced along with the Pebble 2, which is already out, back in May, I think, like basically earlier this year. And the Time 2 is just another smartwatch. But the Core was this kind of interesting little gadget that you could kind of program to do whatever you want. It's basically just a little box with a button, and you could choose to get it to order a taxi every time you push it, if you feel rich enough, or like basically do whatever. But yeah, that's now gone.
Yeah, because Pebble laid off quite a few of their staff recently, saying money was tight, and then these rumors have cropped up over the past few days, and now it's come fully formed. Fitbit's what bought a lot of, well, all of Pebble's software assets.
Yeah.
So, and then also the surprising thing, they said that watches would continue to work, but at a reduced function. Was that right? So we're not, Pebble users can't really expect many more software updates.
So I've got kind of their bullet point like update for everybody on Kickstarter and stuff. It says Pebble is no longer promoting, manufacturing, or selling any devices. They will continue to work as normal. There'll be no immediate changes, but functionality or service quality may be reduced in the future. Which is a bit sad.
I mean, Scott...
Pebble users are well sad about this.
Yes.
Like, really.
Charlotte has got one, and she said in Slack, in full caps, I'm genuinely gutted.
Yeah, I walked into the office yesterday, and she was, like, on the verge of tears. And I was like, what's happening? She was like, Pebble side, and I was like, oh, yeah, that was always going to happen.
Yeah.
Does it kind of raise questions about Kickstarter projects in general, I wonder? Because this is the most successful Kickstarter project ever. And...
Well, apart from that Zach Braff movie that got made on Kickstarter.
Okay, apart from that.
That well-known.
Okay, let's say
it was real bad. It was the one he made with the two kids in California.
I quite
California.
Liked it. Where...
But I've never heard of this film.
Okay, but it's the most popular like consumer tech product that's being funded by Kickstarter, and it's just dead in the water. And if you funded it and you've got one, it's just going to be crap now as well.
I always thought they should have changed their business model because it was so successful originally, raised millions of dollars. But then I thought it was weird that a company that was... perceived to be very successful, continued to sell their stuff in that way. Mm-hmm. I thought they were just...
Yeah, they kind of did it every time. Mm. I've thought this about a lot of Kickstarter and similar crowdfunding projects where it's a bit like, you don't need to do that. Like, should you really be doing that? Is it? I mean, yeah. But, like, it's fine the first time.
Yeah.
But then to do it, you know, for every new project you do, it's a bit like you only really needed it for the first one.
Mm. It brings into question that business model. I mean, Scott and Tamlin, from a B2B point of view, you must see quite a lot of, well, companies basically being bought by Google or Facebook.
Yeah, this was my first thought from like a B2B perspective, is that it just sort of establishes Fitbit as the like the big player in the market now.
Mm. And they already were.
Yeah, I mean, they already were. They were already outselling the Apple Watch, weren't they, by like 3x?
Yeah. Like, the funny thing is Fitbit's banned. Like, they're really well known for... poor build quality. So like, people are constantly saying, oh, my Fitbit broke. But they do such a good job at replacing the bands, like with no hassle, that customer service then just makes them even better somehow.
Yeah, this is like, just the natural strategy is basically once you get to a certain size, you just start eating up your smaller competitors.
Yeah.
You'll do a lot of acqui-hiring where you'll just basically take like all the talent out of Pebble and bring it into Fitbit, and that'll help them in the long run. They'll just become sort of the monopoly in the market. I saw Fitbit speak at an event earlier this year, and they're doing some really scary stuff with data because
yeah,
they
know.
Basically can track everyone's movements all the time.
Mm.
So they are trying to like work with city councils to basically show cities like the flows of people through cities to like try and help them. To make like traffic flows better or like where people commute.
The amount of data they're collecting is crazy.
Yeah, it's creepy.
And it's one of those things where like that kind of thing could be used for real decent things, but it could also be flipped on its head.
Well, you like Amazon workers in warehouses, like pickers have to wear wristbands that have quotas on them
until
they can go to the toilet and stuff.
Yeah,
but I'm wondering.
Show they're moving.
Yeah, but I'm wondering if this is kind of the end of the wearable kind of hype cycle. Because I remember CES a few years ago, literally every company was like, "Oh yeah, we've got a smartwatch. We're doing wearables." And I don't know. I thought it was kind of lame at the time.
Yeah. No, I can see where you're coming from. MWC a couple of years ago, it was all about smartwatches, and Samsung made a big deal about theirs, but. I was kind of thinking about this yesterday because I'm reviewing a Samsung smartwatch at the moment. It's all right. That's my hot take. I was thinking that the Apple Watch, everyone's kind of, Apple says it's selling amazingly, but like you mentioned earlier, Fitbit outsells it. They are two different products. But in a weird way, I was thinking that the Apple Watch, even though it's the cheapest Apple product, is kind of the most luxurious.
Yeah.
It's the one that you don't really need. Everyone gets a subsidized phone contract. Most people will have a laptop. But these smartwatches fall in this weird category of being comparatively affordable, but no one actually needs them.
And they just don't look that nice compared to actual watches.
Yeah,
like,
and that.
Yeah. Don't tell David.
I will. No, I'm glad we could have this conversation without David.
I'm really glad you're
right. I like the ones that are a bit of a what we've kind of coined like semi-smart watches, where it's an analog watch, but it has smart features kind of hidden away. So this Fossil that I'm wearing. It's just a nice analog watch, but it's got.
Show them.
Yeah, I can't actually see it. Oh, that is nice.
But it's got, you know, a vibration motor and a couple of LEDs, so I can know, like, based on the color, who's ringing or texting my phone and stuff. So it's kind of
cool.
It's handy because you wouldn't know just by looking at it.
I can get on board with that.
Yeah, and we've also seen like quite a few other acquisitions in the wearable market recently. So, like, Nokia bought Withings.
Oh, yeah. Withings was, like, another one that has quite nice analog-looking watches with those different functions built in.
And Fossil has acquired Misfit.
That is correct.
Yeah.
You are correct.
Trying to get these correct. But, yeah, quite a few recently. So it's all kind of, it's all changing a bit.
Mm. They would do a lot of different things. I wonder how long it will be before the general public realise that data collection is an issue in that way.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think it's already somewhat, people are already somewhat knowledgeable about it, at least in the workplace. Like, there are these companies that will have tracking modules underneath your chair so they can collect data on when you're away from your desk and stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm. That's a bit, creepy.
judging from the smoke breaks I take, probably not. No.
We'll get into it later with Amazon Go as well, but it's this whole like opt-in versus opt-out thing where basically once you buy a Fitbit and you just click agree to their terms of service and you don't really know what you're opting into generally. Like, we do because we cover it and we care, but like most consumers will just be like, that's fine, and then they don't really realise how much data is being collected.
There was that Amazon cloud contract, and on like page 300 or something, they had a clause about zombies and apocalypse.
Yeah, they just stuck it in, didn't they? Yeah.
Well, it's that age old thing of like, well, you've spent money on a product, you're not going to say no.
No,
like to not you, like you're basically saying you can't use it if you say no. So
no. Yeah, like people,
you don't really have
people just want the convenience. Yeah. People just want the product.
Yeah. And just to note, anyone who did fund the core or the time two will get refunded. So
in March, I thought that was quite a long time to get refunded.
Who's paying that out then, Fitbit?
Yeah, and also
that's pretty good of them.
They also had to publicly say that any refunds will go obviously back to the consumer, but it takes 3 months.
Yeah,
and then if current Fitbit employees own stock in the company, it's now worthless.
This doesn't say much.
And it will go back to like investors and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So
this says Kickstarter backers who have not received their rewards will receive a full refund by December 16th.
Hmm.
No further action is needed.
Where did I get the March thing from? Anyway, it's all a little bit complicated and it kind of gives the impression of it being quite a messy thing.
But yeah, check your statement to see if you've got a refund.
Yeah, check
in the next few weeks.
Little,
yeah.
Nice little
cool. Right, so that is the Pebble news. Quickly go around the room for an opinion here. Smartwatch or massive botch? Chris Martin?
Massive botch.
Yeah. Tamlin?
Massive botch.
Scott?
Massive botch.
There you go. Massive botch.
Agreement.
Don't buy a watch. Okay, cool. coming up next, we are going to talk about police cameras. Well, they're filming those police with cams, they'll store your face. Those police with cams, they will shoot you, but only with said cams. And the footage, well, it's in the cloud. The Metropolitan Police, Tamlin McGee. What have they done?
What haven't they done? The Metropolitan Police have been trialing a program to equip their police officers with body-worn video cameras.
Right.
And there are 3,500 operational in the field at the moment. And it's being rolled out to all 22,000 officers in all of London's 32 boroughs. The whole thing's being dressed up as kind of an exercise in transparency. You know, it's going to cut down on complaints, excessive violence, and all that stuff that people love about the police.
So it's been set up by the Met as a way to prove that they're not lying, and then also as a deterrent.
Yes, but there are a few caveats.
Okay. Can they turn them off like they can in the US?
Well, they can decide when and when to turn them on or off.
That's like deciding when or when not to shoot someone.
Basically, yeah.
It's completely up to the officers.
Right.
I talked to a superintendent at the MPS, Adrian Hutchinson, who is in charge of the mobile technology unit.
Yeah.
And he told me that you have no right not to be filmed. So really, yeah. So
you're
really,
double negative.
Really, the power is fully in the hands of the people with the officers with the cameras. What's interesting about the story is that the cameras themselves, the footage is automatically uploaded to cloud storage by Microsoft. Microsoft Azure. And that raises all sorts of other questions about privacy, how secure the footage is, and so on. The superintendent I talked to told me that if the police deem it worthy for evidence gathering at some future date. They can hold on to the data indefinitely. So they decide when to film you, it goes up on the cloud, and they can just keep it forever.
Right.
If they decide it's not useful, so for example, if they've, you know, got some footage of another police officer kicking a peaceful protester's head in, they can delete that, and it's automatically deleted after 31 days.
Yeah, so basically they can film and store it if you're being violent, but if they're being violent, they can just delete it.
Yes, and one of the...
In a nutshell.
Right. One of the good things that they've been boasting about is that police complaints have dropped as much as 90% in the areas where these things have been trialled, but you have to kind of wonder why.
Yeah. Yeah.
It seems exactly. Like there's a kind of imbalance of power here whereby the police can choose to film you whenever they want and keep that footage on record.
I'm going to assume this footage isn't public record, or can individuals apply to view footage of themselves?
They can through a subject access request. This has not been particularly promoted by the police for some reason. Although the superintendent I talked to did say that they produced a viral video with 200,000 views on it that tells you all about it, but I haven't bothered to watch it, so I can't comment. You have to apply for a subject access request, and if that's successful, you can then get the opportunity to go into the station and watch the footage, but you don't get the data yourself.
No. You could just be aware of what happened before.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I read your article, Tamlin, and there was one thing, the quote that stood out for me from Mr. Hutchinson, I think it was, where I think you must have questioned him on when is the right time to use it,
mm-hmm.
and when are officers expected to use cameras, and he just said, there's no right or wrong, but we offer some straightforward guidance.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
The fact he said the words, there is no right or wrong,
yeah,
that was a bit alarming.
They have some guidance, apparently, but again, they'll be allowed to film footage whenever they want. There's no situation where they're not allowed to film footage, and yeah, all that good stuff.
Do you think this will end up being something that the wider public, if at the moment this is just in London, mm-hmm. but will we be more aware in the media of sort of questionable uses of this? You know, like when somebody gets tasered.
Mm-hmm. By the way, this is manufactured by Taser.
No way.
Yeah.
I was going to say, do we know what cameras they are?
Yeah, they're manufactured by a subsidiary of Taser, law enforcement's fave. So
they're pros,
all in-house.
Tasecam.
Are there any other examples of this kind of thing in UK policing or worldwide?
Well, I think what's really interesting is that we've got a blueprint for this in the USA, where Obama, kind of in response to the Black Lives Matter demonstrations and the killings of black people in Ferguson and so on, they rolled out body-worn cameras across the police force. I don't know the exact scale of it, but I know they started to do it anyway. But funnily enough, it hasn't really seemed to have prevented police violence or brutality.
Yeah, I don't really see it as a deterrent, really.
They seem to turn them off, and then you get headlines about turning off their body cameras at opportune times. But I mean, that's not progress, is it? Like, it's just...
But Scott, there's no right or wrong.
And my favorite thing that he said to me was that it's just common sense, which is, you know, the argument of your average UKIP councillor when they're trying to justify something absolutely horrible. It's just common sense. We'll film you according to our common sense. It's completely up to the officer in question when and when not to film. There are also some other questions raised about the fact that it's going through Microsoft's cloud, which is an American company.
Mm-hmm.
So the servers will be hosted in the UK, which means it's in line with regulations about data, apparently. But there was recently a case in Ireland where the US government demanded that Microsoft hand over all of its data from Outlook.com about people in Ireland, purely because Microsoft is an American company. Now, the US government lost that case, but they can appeal it if they want.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of raises questions about how safe all this highly sensitive data is, you know.
Well, you look at like the iCloud hacks of like celebrity photos, and you realize that like no matter that's Apple, that's one of the biggest tech companies in the world. It doesn't really matter how big they are, they're still susceptible to a hack. So I would be worried that there's that much sensitive video sitting in the cloud that could be hacked at any time, really.
Would you think that's something that it'll probably bother people high up in the police force, maybe not so much the officers on the street themselves, but the chance that if they were to use this system to subvert what they were meant to be doing and do something questionable, morally questionable, surely they'll be worried about public accessing incriminating data in that way.
Yeah,
you'd think that. And one of this guy's arguments to me about why it's, you know, not a big deal at all was simply, well, you live in a surveillance state already, so
great.
Well, his specific quote was, the reality of life is you get filmed a lot, but it's like, well, we're not all that happy about it.
Yeah,
I'm about to be honest, you know. And also he said a lot about communities, whatever that means. Communities love it. They love to be filmed.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
What, you mean they think that they're presenting this as... Well, it's like a way to say that communities will be just be safer because
absolutely.
On film.
It's about transparency and holding officers accountable, but only when they decide when to film.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of a baffling story, and it hasn't really been picked up that much either.
No, it hasn't.
No.
You kind of alluded to it just then. I think because it's an older technology, we've all just grown up with the knowledge that we're on CCTV however many thousands of times a day in central London, and people just seem to have... forgotten.
And the difference is
got over it.
A lot of CCTV footage in the UK in general is not that good. I mean, if you remember in the 2011 riots and the kangaroo courts that the police subsequently held, they released a bunch of CCTV footage of people who were allegedly involved in the riots, and a lot of it was grainy and unusable, and that's the stuff they decided to release. But these will be good cameras, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know the specific definition they'll be filming in, but they can film for up to 12 hours and it'll presumably be a lot clearer than some CCTV camera from the 90s.
Yeah.
Well, Taser, better known for electrocuting people than, you know, high-quality video, but we'll
high
see.
Quality electrocutions from Taser.
Part of that's just because it's much closer to the subject and what's happening rather than a camera that's quite far away.
Yeah, that's the difference, isn't it? It's very specific filming rather than...
Apart from the fact the camera's moving a lot more.
Yeah.
It is interesting to think of it perhaps as a bit of a retaliation to the trend of people filming police when they're being arrested. You can look on YouTube for, you know, arrest footage, and there's a lot of footage out there of police behaving completely inappropriately. There was one video recently of a cop smashing up some person's car, you know, for absolutely no reason whatsoever. There's footage of a cop at St Pancras Station, just around down the road from here, beating the hell out of some guy for no seeming reason as well. There was footage of a cop at one of the London Underground stations with his knee on the back of this young man's head and placing a spit hood over him.
Yeah.
Just like these completely excessive acts. So it's interesting to think that, you know, we have the capability to film, now so do they. I don't know, from a legal standpoint, what would be more permissible.
I've been watching Atlanta recently on Fox, which is a show about Atlanta, Georgia, but there's this really cool episode, I think it's episode 7, where it includes like retro adverts during the show.
Yeah.
And one of them is like a like cereal advert, but it's actually a indictment on police brutality, and it's one of the cleverest pieces of satire I've seen this year. Probably on YouTube somewhere. But yeah, I mean, it's a huge issue in the US, and it'll be interesting to see if it sort of comes over the pond now that the body-worn cameras are more sort of prevalent.
The kind of last thing I want to get at is, you know, there have been instances where evidence that makes the police look bad has mysteriously gone missing, and you have to wonder what accountability they'll, what procedures they'll have in place to stop that from happening with footage that may not show officers in the best of light. I don't know if there is any.
We might get some really good new like police shows like after 11 on like a channel like Bravo.
So some positives.
That's the positive.
Yeah, obviously I presume that, yeah, like you say, the footage will come to rely on to justify like sort of controversial police acts. There won't be any sort of third party adjudicator, will there? It would all just be internally processed by the Met.
Or like the IPCC, which tends to
side with them.
Police get away with murder, literally, you know.
Well, so, fun times in London town.
Love to live dystopia. So nice.
Yeah.
Happy Friday, everyone.
Yeah. Okay, well, yeah, that's a bit of grim news for you there, but check out Tamlin's article about it on techworld.com. So I'm just going to go around the room. Tamlin McGee, police camera action or guilty until proven innocent?
Guilty until proven innocent.
Scott Carey?
Police camera action, because it's too good.
And Chris?
Police camera action, just
oh, rats, okay. Okay, apparently we're for it, but we're probably not. Really.
Probably not for it, just for that catchphrase.
Okay, so after police brutality comes mindless consumerism.
Yay!
Buy some stuff before you go. Don't need any stuff, cause that's a no-no. Take some stuff and then you go. Amazon's laughing tonight. It's so easy to buy. Scott Carey, where have all the jobs gone?
are we going hard on the jobs angle here?
As you wish.
Yeah, well,
explain first, maybe.
Amazon Go is Amazon's latest innovation. They are opening a physical shop, like a grocery store, which looks very much like a Whole Foods.
In
Seattle.
Exactly.
And they're testing it at the moment, so it's not open to the public, but they're hoping to open it at the beginning of 2017 in the US, apparently.
So if the listener hasn't seen this video, can you just explain the process?
So basically the idea is that you walk into the store, you use your phone to use the Amazon Go app to like go through a turnstile, and then a load of cameras and sensors, etc., will detect how you move through the store, what you pick up and put in your bag or in your pockets. And then you can just walk out and it will bill you to your Amazon account the minute you walk out of the store. It's a really, really good idea. Like, it's a really clever idea from Amazon. And I mean, it's really, really convenient. And if it works, it will be a great success for them, because the idea of just walking in, picking up your sandwich and walking out is obviously a consumer's dream. There's a lot of caveats.
Yeah, because in your article you said they were very vague about how they explained how it worked.
Yeah.
The quote was computer vision, deep learning algorithms, and sensor fusion.
Yeah, it's very BuzzFeed heavy, very buzzword heavy, in the fact that they basically yada yada the technology behind it. So they say, yeah, you know, it's like computer vision and sensors. And then they just show you the cool bits about like picking something off the shelf. It then goes into your like virtual basket on your phone. And then if you put it back on the shelf, it'll come out. So it's like,
okay, so it does have that. It can do that.
Yeah. So this is one thing that I like sort of picked up, is that there's the capability for you to like pick up a cupcake and put it back, and it'll like sense whether you have decided to purchase it or not. But then they could also, if you did that a couple of times, in theory, ping you a notification saying, fancy that cupcake, here's 10% off. Which I personally find terrifying. Retailers probably think that it's a blindingly good idea.
Scott, wasn't there something about racial profiling in there as well?
Yeah, so this is the other thing about so they yada yada the technology in the video, which is completely fair enough. It's like a 1 minute promotional video made for consumers.
Yeah.
But what a couple of journalists did, particularly from The Verge, I think, is discover this 2014 patent that Amazon Technologies filed for, which is basically the underlying technology for Amazon Go. It's basically a blueprint of the entire system that will underpin Amazon Go. So it's linking up all of these technologies like voice, cameras, sensors, your phone, and making it possible to do this like cashierless shopping experience. There's some really weird things in this patent. So basically, using their computer vision algorithms and their camera footage, they're able to detect the skin tone of a person. And the reason they say this is because they say that it makes it easier to detect whether an item is in someone's hand or not.
Right.
But also it just gives them a trove of demographics data. So they'll know basically the racial profile of everyone walking into their stores. They might be able to do some gender profiling, although it probably won't be an exact science, and things like that.
So what would people's issue be with this? I mean, aside from the obvious racial element, technically you could say that companies already have that information anyway. If you buy something from Amazon and they know you're a woman.
Absolutely. Like, yeah.
So how, why is this more controversial?
I think it's the whole intrusiveness and what I was saying earlier about the opt-in, opt-out. Like when you walk into a shop, you don't expect to be profiled the minute you walk in.
Sure. Yeah.
Maybe you are. Like, and I know that there are a lot of retail tech startups that have been like working with retailers to do this sort of thing where they basically want to have a better idea of people's buying habits, so what they do when they walk into a store, where they head, where they don't, so they can better position items. But what Amazon are doing is a real step change in that. They're really upping the ante in terms of knowing exactly what people are doing at all times in their stores.
I met some TED Talk man once who...
Let's call him Ted.
And he talked me through the history of club cards, and that was always about just generating data to better target.
But arguably, all of that stuff, even... maybe this on a new level, arguably it is all just very useful and can help them make the store better.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, that's 100% the way that they'll see it, and there will be huge benefits for the consumer.
So what could they do that's so bad with it?
Are you suggesting giving it to a policing authority?
No, I honestly don't think it's that bad. I just think that like the lack of awareness of how much data is being like collected when into the stores is something. But like as you say, the consumer won't be bothered by that. Like they are complicit with that trade off of like your privacy when it comes to convenience.
I don't think it's that different to me having a Next card.
No.
And Sainsbury's know everything I buy. And then when I go to do a shop online, it goes, oh, these are your favourites.
Yeah.
In that kind of area. So it makes it a lot easier, like quicker to do a shop. And then at the end it goes, oh, you normally buy this stuff.
Yeah.
And you've forgotten it. And then I'm like, oh, yeah, I have actually.
Yeah.
Like, it's really useful.
No, it is. I mean, there's a lot of it is hugely convenient. In the patent also, they make... it clear that they're going to be installing a ton of microphones throughout the store.
Okay.
So, and seeing as Amazon developed Alexa, they are pretty good at detecting speech and passing it into natural language. So there's a distinct possibility they can listen to your conversations when you're in the shop as well.
But then at the same time, we carry microphones around on our phones all day as well.
Yep. But is that being recorded and stored and being used for marketing reasons? But like on a more practical note, Amazon will have a lot of things to iron out here. Like there are sort of knotty issues with like if you walked into a shop with your friend and they picked something up and put it into your basket, who's getting charged? There's things like if you're on like a family Amazon account and you shop together. How does that work? So there's a few things that are going to have to iron out. But the thing with Amazon is that, like, if anyone can do this, it's probably them. Like, they tend to get these things right. They've got a lot of resource behind them. They're generally a lot of very smart people. They're very good at technology. This requires a lot of computing power in the background, but Amazon basically own half the computing power in the world through AWS, so that's not going to be a problem.
So, yeah, just going back slightly to how they actually register how you get a product, I didn't actually realise before you said it there would be so many sensors involved in the process, because judging by the video, I thought the bloke just picked up his panini or whatever, and then when he walks out, it looked like it was through some sort of turnstile, and surely if it's on your person and your, so is your phone, when there'd just be some sort of NFC vibe. So, if you walk through, so why is it tracking you the whole way through the store if you pick up and put something down, if you don't leave with it?
Yeah, so there's like a two-factor authentication with the products.
Okay.
So basically there'll be the sensor which detects if something's been picked off the shelf.
That's a bit like a mini bar
yes
in a hotel.
Yeah,
so it knows something's gone from that, basically just based on the weight.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like really old technology, but for some reason they're calling it fusion sensors to make it sound like it's really like cool sensor. But then they'll also verify that either through an RFID tag, which will be detected through the turnstiles and also your phone.
Okay.
So everything sort of talks to each other. But then they also, they bought a startup in 2009 which specialized.
Was it Bread?
No, it was not Bread. Rest in peace, Bread. It was, I can't remember the name of the startup, but they basically swallowed it up, and it is a, they specialize in computer vision technology for products. So they can detect whether a box of cereal is cornflakes or crunchy nut, basically.
Oh, right.
So they'll use that technology in conjunction with their cameras to detect what items are on a person. So there's a lot of moving parts, and it sounds extremely complex, and it probably is because no one's done it yet. But as I said earlier, like, if anyone can pull this off, it's probably Amazon.
I think the identity aspect of it would be really interesting as well, because you'll have to confirm that it is, you are who you say you are.
Yeah. So I pinged them an email, with a load of questions, and unsurprisingly, they haven't responded yet. But
because they haven't got any staff anymore.
Well, yeah.
Actually,
yeah. You open with the staffing thing.
Yeah. What do we think?
I mean, it's quite obvious what this means for staffing, in the fact that you don't need any.
The idea is that there's no checkout.
Yeah.
So you don't need checkout staff.
No, and the idea is that it's impossible to shoplift, so you don't need security.
Right.
In theory, but I'm sure.
But then, in larger parts of Amazon's business, obviously they can't really do this with their warehouse staff, because the whole convenience of shopping online is you don't have to walk around a massive store.
Yeah, I mean, that's where they tested this. They tested it in their warehouses, and now they're sort of building a store because they're ready to go public with it.
Mm. So what do you think? So at the moment, it is just going to be basically food and groceries and stuff.
It looks like...
It is just kind of a supermarket, basically.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be like a city centre mini-mart, where basically it's going to be grab-and-go stuff. So it's going to be lots of sort of lunch items, ready-made food, milk, bread... booze. There's a lot of booze in the advert.
It's not in focus, though.
No, it's not. It's really not.
They also said they're going to sell kind of like meal kits where it has all the ingredients you need for like a meal that night.
It's very, it's very Seattle Whole Foods.
Yeah.
But there's a possibility that once they, because they need to do that to make it easier for themselves to like detect the weight of things and like, and put RFID tags and whatever. They'll need to sort of test it out and perfect the whole system if they want to, which I think is their game plan, is sell this into other retailers. So sell it into Whole Foods or sell it into an Apple store or something like that, where they can then get rid of all their stuff.
It's funny because there were rumors that Amazon was going to buy Ocado a little while ago, and they've just completely blown them out of the water with this.
Because
Ocado's whole principle was, oh, we're really tech savvy, we've got automated warehouses. Well, so does Amazon, and it's doing supermarkets now as well.
I mean, it's just yet another example of Amazon scaring the hell out of other retailers. They should be. Like, they've already been like disrupted to hell by Amazon, and now they're gonna like come at them where it really hurts, which is their physical stores.
Yeah, and then they could continue. They've already kind of spoiled the book business by inventing the Kindle. I mean, this is perfect for bookstores as well.
Yeah. Well, they opened a bookstore.
They did do a physical place, didn't they?
It was basically when I started this job, so it must have been just over a year ago that they opened a bookstore in Seattle. And they brought a lot of their sort of e-commerce stuff to the physical store, where all the books were like face out and like the descriptions were on like a tablet underneath.
Right.
And, like,
yeah.
The, you know, like the Waterstones like staff recommendation thing. And they saw like a huge upturn in business on like others. And then now you've seen that physical bookstores like Waterstones and Borders have actually adopted a lot of those techniques in their shops because it's the best way of doing it.
From a B2B standpoint, and I promise I'll keep it brief. You hear a lot about retailers in the UK, especially doing something that they like to call omni-channel, right? Which is that you have the internet online element, you have the bricks and mortar element, and you bring it all together by allowing consumers to engage in the store. And, you know, they have some things like staff equipped with iPads, or you can get recommendations on your phone while you're in there. This just seems like on a completely different level.
Yeah, this is... This is what they would call true omni-channel.
Well, just as a final thought, they will need people to stock the shelves.
Yes. Yeah, they will. They don't yet have robots and drones stocking the shelves, but it's a distinct possibility.
Yeah.
You know, they'll be able to do all their stocking information. Tamlin was saying to me the other day, this opens up lots of possibilities for predictive stocking, because they'll know like the ebbs and flows of demand for things like pumpkins around Halloween and stuff like that, so they can stock more or stock less, and they can automatically ping like orders to their fulfillment centers, and it could become a very, very automated process.
The data on visual merchandising as well, yes, where people look when they walk in, what they buy.
Exactly. Crazy. Yeah, you can do some eye tracking things.
That's nuts. But I mean, we'll all still give it a go if we have the opportunity, but I mean, you don't have to go if you don't want to, listener.
No, you do not.
Cool. Well, to quickly go around the room, pretty obvious, but Scott Carey, Amazon Go or Amazon No?
Amazon Go.
Tamlin?
Amazon Go.
Yeah, and Chris Martin.
Amazon Go.
Okay, so we don't care who has our data. Listener, you decide for yourself. Thanks for tuning in this week to the UK Tech Weekly. We'll be back next week, obviously, for more brutally divisive tech chat. You can still listen to us via Acast, iTunes, SoundCloud, embedded online or in-bed offline. Subscribe, spread the news, tell your mates which one of us has the most annoying voice. Until next time, say goodbye, guys.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.